Morning. Today's daf in Avodah Zarah, Zayin Beis, Mar Nayin Aleph Amud Beis. We're talking about making kinyanim with a goy. Yesterday, the Gemara debated exactly how the kinyan is affected. Is the kinyan affected through Mashiach, or is it affected through Kesef? As we learned yesterday, when it comes to Mashiach, when it comes to kinyanim by Jew to one, from one Jew to another Jew, so the method of kinyanim is going to be through Mashiach. So that's halacha p'suka that we know. The Mishnah Kedushin, various Gemaras discuss it, but that's halacha p'suka. But when it comes to the kinyan between a Jew and a non-Jew, so perhaps it operates on a different mechanism in order to actually affect the transaction. So that was a debate in the Gemara yesterday between a Meimer and Rav Ashi. A Meimer says Mashiach is a method of kinyan when it comes to a guy. Rav Ashi says nope, it's not Mashiach, but rather it's Kesef. And so a subsequent discussion through yesterday's daf in terms of what the halacha is going to follow. The Gemara does not arrive at a clear conclusion, although we'll see in just a moment. The Gemara does seem to favor a Meimar, but the Gemara does not arrive at an absolute conclusion. I mentioned yesterday the Tosus on Ayin Aleph and Aleph, Tosus Divra Maschol Rav Ashi. So he argues and he debates what in fact is going to be the halacha, the accepted halacha, has application towards Pesach when the Rav is going to be the shliach, the agent to sell our chametz to a guy. So what mechanism is he going to use for a kinyan? Is he going to be using Mashiach? Is he going to be using Kesef? So the answer is he's going to be using both. Actually, the real answer is he's going to be using other methods of kinyanim as well, just to be sure. At least he's going to use both a Meimar and Ravashi's method of kinyan. And I pointed out yesterday, Tosos says that you should be concerned about both these opinions, meaning Tosos towards the bottom of that Tosos. He says that you should use both Mashiach and you should use Kesef as well. By the way, parenthetically, Tosos was not talking about Mechiras Chametz. Tosos was talking about another occasion where there would be a halachic benefit to make a sale to a non-Jew, and that would be for the purpose of Bechor. You know that you have an animal that is a firstborn animal, so it's Kedusha, and it's Kedusha's Bechor, and has to be given to a Kohen and can only be brought as a carbon in the base of Mikdash. Of course, the problem is that there is no base of Mikdash and you can't bring it as a carbon. And so, what do you do? So one of the loopholes that was used for centuries, unfortunately now for millennia, is that we would give a guy part ownership of the animal of the mother. And then the subsequent child that's born does not have Kedushas Bechor. So that, another occasion where you would need to generate a sale to a non-Jew in order to create a certain status, a certain exemption. Okay. That takes us to basically a review of yesterday's Gemara. We are picking up right where we left off. Amalei Ravina LeRavashi. We're on the bottom of Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. And the Gemara continues this discussion with the following Tashma Damar Bichia Bar Abba Amar Rav Yochanan. Ben Noach Nerag Apachs Mishav Pruta. So we know there are Shev Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. We know one of the Shev Mitzvahs B'nai Noach is Gzela. A Goy is not allowed to steal from another or from a Jew. And unlike when it comes to Jewish law, so the halacha is that in order for the theft to qualify as a theft, it has to be Shev Pruta. Meaning, certainly if it's less than Shev Pruta, it's Aser. In other words, you're not allowed to steal any amount. But in other words, for it to be considered a formal Iser, so it has to be a Shev Pruta. However, when it comes to a Ben Noach, Ben Noach stealing from a Jew, even if it's less than a Shava Pruta, and even though it doesn't normally halachically have the status of Mammon, but that's still considered a theft. And then, the Braisa ends off, it's not a Braisa, it's a member of Rav Yochanan, with the words, V'lo nitan lihi shavon. And also, he can't undo it, meaning he can't return that which he stole. He stole and he can't return it. Now, Iyamar Mashiach above the Kochamenu Kona Amai Nerag. So the Gemara asks now a very, very technical question, and that is the following. We know that in order for a theft to be a theft, there has to be a certain kinyan involved. There has to be a formal acquisition. Meaning that when a Jew is stealing from another Jew, so the Jew that steals, the ganav, so he has what we call throughout the halacha, kinyane geneva. It doesn't mean that he acquires it. It doesn't mean that it's his. It just simply means that it's a legality. In order for it to be considered a thief, he has to make a certain kinyan on the item. Picking the item up, taking the item. In other words, there needs to be a formal kinyan. So you're telling me now that when it comes to a non-Jew, if his method of kinyan is not Mashiach, but his method of kinyan is, let's say, Kesef, so how does a thief ever steal? Meaning, legally, technically, how does he ever become a thief if Mashiach is not the mechanism of kinyan? So the Gemara's answer, So Mishum Desari LeYisrael. Oh, by the way, the Gemara says, "Am I Nehara?" And then the Gemara says, "You know, he's going to be killed over this." We know that for any violation of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, the punishment is Bisa. It's Hereg. Debatable whether or not that's true by the one positive commandment, meaning there are six negative prohibitions, there's one positive commandment. One positive commandment is Dinim. Is a Ben Noach going to be killed because he didn't set up a court system? So that's the debate amongst the Rishonim. By the other six, by the negatives, for sure, the punishment is going to be is going to be capital punishment for violating the other six. In the meantime, however, Gemara's question over here, if Mashiach is not the means of acquisition, so how does the guy ever steal? Answers Gemara Mishum Ditzar Lisrael, because the Gemara says you're not focusing on what the Isser is. The Isser is not so much the act of theft. The Isser is, says the Gemara, Tzari Yisrael. In other words, that he's causing pain and anguish to a Jew. And as a result of that, that is the Isser, and that's why he's going to be punished. So the Gemara says, Amayna lo nitan lishavon, top of Ayin Bezim at Aleph. And what is meant when it says lo nitan lishavon? Ena b'toras hishavon. And lo nitan lishavon means as follows. Look, did he actually steal? The answer is no. Meaning, it's not theft in the formal sense, in the classic sense of he took something from somebody's possession out of his possession. Because the truth of the matter is, says the Gemara, is that it never left the Jew's possession. It always is in the Jew's possession. Because the only method of kinyan as it relates to a guy is kesef and not meshicha. But what it just simply, what the Brisa just simply means, when the Brisa says, no nita li shavon, Rav Yochanan, is that simply it's not applicable. Meaning there's not even a discussion that we had about returning the item because he never took the item out of the Jew's possession. Okay, Ihachi, Gemara says, well, if that's true, Ema Seifa. Read on in the statement of Rav Yochanan. Bachaver v'natle mimenu ne'eragala. Let's say you have another non-Jew who takes the item and steals it from the first Ganav, so he too is going to be put to death over it. So the Gemara says, Bishlam Aresha Mishim Ditzar Leisrael, La Seifa Mayavin. Now the Gemara says, now, in the first theft, in the first act of theft, I understand. He caused pain and anguish to the Jew. It's fine. You want to tell me that that's the Isser? Okay, I get it. But now the second non-Jew is stealing from the first non-Jew that same item. Why is he going to be put to death over the item? So the Gemara says, Ela Seifa, my Avid, Ela Shmamina, Mashiach Bo V'Kochavim, Konesh, Mamina. So the Gemara says, so really, the truth of the matter is, it's much easier to learn this statement of Rav Yochanan if you side with the opinion of a Meimar. If Mashiach is the method of Kinyan as it relates to non-Jew to Jew, or Jew to non-Jew, neither direction, so then you understand that when the non-Jew steals an item, and Mashiach is the mechanism of Kinyan, so then really truth of the matter is, it makes sense. It's much easier to understand. But if the method of Kinyan is not Mashiach, so then, quite frankly, the statement of Rav Yochanan is much more difficult to understand. Okay, we're on Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, we're towards the top of the Amud, five lines down, and the Gemara now is going to be drawing attention to another topic, not related per se, but at least a conclusion of this topic can seemingly be generated by our Mishnah, and that is the topic of first refusal. In other words, if let's say, happens often as the case where, right, you know a local, and you know that he's thinking about selling his house, but he's not ready yet to sell, and so you go over to him and say, look, I know you want to sell, I know you're not perfectly ready yet, but you know what, I'm an interested buyer, would you give me the right of first refusal? And let's make this nice and legal. Let's draw up a contract. Let's make this let's put some teeth to it. So is there something halachically to this idea of right of first refusal? That's a really interesting topic in of itself. It just happens to be the guys at Gemara in a moment is going to point out. It seems like our Mishnah can seemingly weigh in on this topic. So here, basically, we have a conversation between two parties where, and again, by the way, no longer are we talking about Jew, non-Jew. In other words, we're just talking about the topic of right of first refusal. So one guy says to another, look, if you're planning on selling it, so would you sell it to me? He says, yeah, absolutely. When I sell this property, I'm only going to sell the property to you. And now the property gets sold to another person. Okay, so even though he already committed himself to the first buyer, you are going to be given the right of first refusal. He then goes and he just simply jumps and leapfrogs to another person, sells it to another person. I'm Rav Yosef Kanakama. So Rav Yosef says, no, the first person acquired it. Meaning the first person was given right of first refusal, and so the first person acquired it. So Amalei Abaye v'halo pasak. So Abaye says no, meaning that even though when he was talking to the first person, they weren't talking price. And if you're not talking price, so therefore there is no kinyan that's made with the first person. In other words, what it really was nothing more than just simply a conversation. A conversation with no halachic grounding. But they don't have the contract doesn't list the price. In other words, then if you have a contract and it doesn't list the price, then the contract's not on the sale. The contract's just simply on the conversation. And there's no price mentioned in the contract. So really all you have is just but a conversation. And so a conversation is not a kinyan. And the Gemara says, and how do I know that this is right? That if you don't have a price in this negotiation, so then there is no right of first refusal. So the Gemara says, I know because of our Mishnah. And now we're going to go to our Mishnah. So again, it's really a Bava topic. If I'm going to guess correctly, I'd put in Bava Basra. Whatever. Bava Basra, Bava Metzia. It's a Bava topic, but it fits over here in Avodah Zarah as a short break from Yayin Nesach, because the Mishnah here in Avodah Zarah seems to weigh in on this topic. What did we learn yesterday's Mishnah? Hamocher yonelove kochavim pasak ashlo madad dama mutarim. Madad ashlo pasak dama vasurim. So look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah seems to be very clear that, again, the Mishnah is talking about selling wine from a Jew to a non-Jew. And again, the goal, as we mentioned yesterday, was to have the sale finalized before he actually touches the wine. Because once he touches the wine's Yayin Nesach, and then you're going to get paid for wine Yayin Nesach, and that you can't do. But if you complete the sale, and then he handles the wine, so then it's fine. Because then he renders the Yayin Nesach after it's in his possession, and so you're good. So what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that the sale has to first have a price tag to it. Because if it doesn't have a price tag, it's just simply not a sale. So that means to say that if, let's say, you sold them the goods, but you and him didn't talk price, and then he handled the wine, it's not a sale. And he rendered the wine Yayin Nesach, and therefore it's not a good sale. And therefore, when you do eventually sell it, it's not good. So that's what we learned in yesterday's Mishnah. So my Havi Allah, so the Gemara says, well, so what do you want to conclude? The Gemara says, my Havi Allah, what do you mean, what do you want to conclude? I mean, we just quoted the Mishnah. Kid Kamrinan, like we just stated. The Mishnah in yesterday's daf couldn't be any clearer. If we're not talking price, it's not a sale. So Demachomer Yayin Nesach Shani. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the Mishnah is not really going to be such a good proof, because maybe it's just a chumrah. Meaning maybe even without the discussion of a price, if we agree in principle to a sale, even without a price, maybe the sale would be a good sale. Yayin Nesach, he said it's not a good sale. Okay, that's a chumrah. Again, Yayin Nesach, Avodah Zarah, throughout this Masechta, we've talked time and again about this idea that sometimes we're going to be a little bit more machmir when it comes to Avodah Zarah. But really, Maker Adin, if we're talking even in general terms, without mentioning a price, about a sale, so maybe the sale would be good. Tosh?
Even with the price, the right of first refusal is not a sale. It's just the right of first refusal.
It's an option.
All right, right. In other words,
the right of first refusal. Why is that a sale?
And
the price.
No, right. Correct. At this juncture, it's not. But in other words, look, I'm saying to you, I'm not ready to sell, but when I'm ready to sell it, here's when I'm going to sell it to you, and at this price. In just a moment, the Gemara is going to wonder, well, what if the second person comes and makes a better offer? The Gemara is going to get there. Okay, Tashma. Dam Rav Yidi Barav and Uvda Hava Be Rav Chisav, Rav Chisav Be Rav Huna, Upashte Mehad Nan. So the Gemara says, well, there is a Braisa, and the Braisa deals with the following scenario. Mashach Hamar V'Pola V'Echnisim L'Soch Beiso. So let's say the wine right now is being held by the driver, meaning the wine hasn't been unloaded yet. So it's still on the person or on the donkey in any event, but it's not been unloaded. Bein pasak ashlo madad, bein madad ashlo pasak lo kana. No kinyan as of yet. Ush nehem yichol nachzer behem. No kinyan as of yet, and both can back out of the deal. Pirkan v'yichnisam l'soch beso. So let's say you unload the merchandise. Pasuk Hashalomadad Ein Shneim Yichol Nachzer Bo. If let's say we agree to a price, so now that's considered a complete sale. Madad Ad Shelo Pasuk Shneim Yichol Nachzer Behem. However, if we measured but we didn't talk about a price, so then the two parties can renege from the deal because we haven't talked about a price. So clearly from over here, from this braisa, it's very clear that if we are only talking about a sale in general terms, and we're not discussing a price, and even if we know exactly how much merchandise there is, but if we don't know what the price is, it's simply not a sale.
How doesn't he acquire it when it's in his
property? Not if they don't know what the price is, so then no. The answer is no. In other words, the kinyan requires an understanding between two parties. Just because I take your item, and even if you're interested in telling me that you want to sell me the item, right? I go to your garage sale, right? It looks really good. I pick it up. I take it. Well, that doesn't mean anything. Meaning, right? You didn't write the price on it. I don't know how much it is. It's not a sale. It's not a sale until there's an agreement between the two parties of what the price is going to be. Okay, so here we are basically back to the question of giving somebody an option to write a first refusal. And he says, look, if I sell it to you, I'm going to sell it to you b'meya zuzay. So now we have a kinyan, a price. And basically, I'm not ready to sell it now, but when I do, you're my man, 100 zuz. Okay, and as life happens, so another person comes along and makes an offer of 120. Amar Rav Kahana Kanakama. So Rav Kahana says, okay, the first person acquired it. You gave him the option, you gave him the right of first refusal, and so therefore the first person acquires it. Now, Maskava Rav Yaakov Minar Pakod, Hai Zuzi Ansu. So Rav Yaakov Minar Pakod says as follows, look. We're going to look at it the following way, in the following manner. When the first buyer comes to the person and says, I want to buy from you. And the seller says, good. In other words, I'm going to sell to you, and I'm going to sell to you for 100. And along comes another person and makes a better offer. The original way, the way Rav Kahana wants to look at it is as follows. Basically, it's sale to party A, sale to party B. Right, and he promised party A that he was going to sell it to him. So basically now he, according to Rav Kahana, I can now turn around and sell it to party B because I already promised its sale to party A. Party B offered me more money. Okay, party B offered me more money. But in other words, but I already committed myself to selling it to party A. And so therefore, once I'm ready to sell it, it's got to go to party A. That's Rav Kahana's view. And Rav Yaakov Minar Pakod says, no, you're looking at it all wrong. Meaning, when he promised to sell it to party A, and he says, but I'm not ready to sell yet, truth of the matter is, he's not ready to sell. And it's true that in the event that when he does sell, he's going to sell it to party A, and he promises that, and he gives him the option, and he gives him the right of first refusal, that part's true, but the truth of the matter is, right now he doesn't want to sell. Along comes party B, and party B says, I'm going to offer you not 100, but 120. So we're not going to be saying now, oh, you know what? He's ready to sell, so therefore he should go to party A. No. The way we're going to look at it, says Rav Yaakov Minar Pakod, is that he's not really ready to sell. It just, along comes party B and made him an offer that he simply couldn't refuse. Meaning, if it was at 100, he wasn't ready to sell it. But now that it's at 120, how can I not say no? I have to say yes. So the way Rav Yaakov Minar Pakod looks at it, is that the 120 is not just simply another sale. 120 now is just, no, I'm not really ready to sell. At 100, I wasn't ready to sell, but at 120, I got to say yes. So Rav Yaakov Minar Pakod says that that's why in such a scenario, the second person, in fact, is going to be the one who is the rightful owner. So, and the Gemara seems to favor V'hilchasa k'Rav Yaakov Minar Pakod. So the Gemara says, and that, in fact, is the halacha. Interesting detail, which the Gemara does not discuss, is, let's say, after the second party comes and makes the offer of 120, so the first party says, okay, 120, fine, 120. And then, so he now, he matches the offer of the second person. And he was given the option of right of first refusal. So can his option plus the match allow him to be the rightful buyer? So the Gemara doesn't discuss it. It's debated amongst the Rishonim. Really, really interesting detail in these negotiations.
Would it be different if it was written down as a contract?
But in other words, when you say written as a contract, meaning as in other words, just the right written down as a contract.
The only thing that's missing is the date. In other words, where they write, the,
right.
I will sell this field to you for X price.
Right, right, right.
To sell the date,
right.
We're not set.
Right.
Because in that case, it would probably be more of a.
I hear that. I do hear that. I don't know. You know, I can give you a guess, but I hear a distinction to be made.
For a real option, you need to have some value. Beside the price, you need to give some consideration.
Yeah. Okay. Amar Lay, so he says to him, Kiddushayma Betulasa. Okay, so now we have a negotiation between two parties, buyer and seller. And so the seller says to the buyer, look, how much is it worth? Who knows? I mean, I don't know. And I'm not interested in hearing what you think it's worth. So I'll tell you what. Let's get a panel of three appraisers, and they'll tell us how much it's worth. And whatever they say, whatever the appraisal comes in, so that's it. So in other words, and so there is an agreement in principle to a sale, and there's also an agreement in principle to whatever the appraisers say. And specifically, the language in the contract is Kiddushayma Betulasa, as appraised by three. Now, I feel a tray, me go Tulasa. Now here, you have a panel of three coming, and two of the three agree to a number. The third person, the third appraiser, says, now they're off. So over here, how does it normally operate with Beis Din? When you have a Beis Din, it's a Beis Din of three, so two out of three is going to be the accepted position, meaning Rove, right, like any Beis Din. So over here, by appraisers, you're asking for three appraisers. There's a reason why you're asking for three. You want them to operate like a Beis Din. So as long as you have a majority, two out of the three, so then you're good to go. Kid Amre Betulasa, however, if let's say your language is not Kid Shime Betulasa, but rather your language is Kid Amre Betulasa, Adame Betulasa, you're clearly using your language, you want consensus. Meaning it's not going to be good enough if three people, if the majority of three people agree to a price, but in order for the sale to be finalized, I need all three of them to agree. Kiddushayme ba'arba ad amre ba'arba. V'koshechein da'amrelei kida'amre ba'arba. Now let's say you want an appraising a panel of four people. Even if you were to use the words kiddushayme, you need all four people to agree. Why? Rashi explains. Because once you're using four as your number, so basically you're saying, I don't want this to work as a Beis Din. And how do I know that? Because the Beis Din is made up of three. The Beis Din is not made up of four. By virtue of the fact that you use the number four, you clearly are departing from the world of Beis Din, and you're clearly saying, look, I'll sell it to you at the appraised price, but it's got to be a panel of four. Why four? I'll tell you why. Because I want all four people to agree to the price. If I would have said three, and I would use the language of Shimei, of an approximation, so then we're talking Beis Din, then we're talking about majority, but once I give you the number four, I need consensus.
Why not two?
You could. Gemara just simply using a number. Right. Correct. Amalei kiddushayme betulasa v'asu tulasa v'shamua. So v'amalei eidach leisu tulasa achrina dekim lutvei. Let's say now the negotiation between the two parties goes like this. One of the parties, Gemara doesn't seem to differentiate, by the way, whether it's the buyer or the seller, but one of the parties say, let's get a panel of three. Let them appraise it. The other one's like, okay. And then after the appraisal comes in, the other person says, those three don't know what they're doing. Right? I can't believe you got that appraisal team. That's garbage. Let me bring my appraisal team in. My appraisal team is better. So I'm Rav Papa Dino Hu Dema'akev. So Rav Papa says, that's fair. In other words, he's also bringing an appraisal team. It's also made up of three. That's fair. So Maskal Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yoshua Mi Mai Dahani Kim Leitfei. Damahani Kim Leitfei. So Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yoshua says, wait one second. Meaning, now it seems to be arbitrary. Meaning, we agreed to an appraisal. We agreed to a panel of three. We brought in the panel of three. You're now unhappy. You're now going to bring a new panel. What makes your panel any better than this panel? And the Gemara says, in fact, that's the halacha. Meaning, if once we have an agreement in terms that I'm going to sell to you for whatever the appraised price is, and we agree that a panel of three is going to be one establishing the appraised price, once that appraisal comes in, you can't have another party coming along and saying, nah, not that panel. Let's get another appraisal team. Okay.
Did he participate in choosing the panel the first time or no?
That's a good question. I don't know. We now go back to the world of Yai Nesach. It was a little respite, just a small break from Yai Nesach, to write a first refusal, and now we head back, dive back into the topic of Yai Nesach, And here we're talking about topics that, quite frankly, we spoke about earlier. A little bit of a repeat, but the question of how to view a flow, a stream of liquid. A stream of liquid creates a connection or does not create a connection between one container and another container. So I'm going to read the Mishnah. I'm not going to do a great job. Talk about self-promotion. I'm not going to do a great job explaining the Mishnah because there are, quite frankly, a lot of details in the Mishnah that need to be ironed out. So I'll just give you, I'll read the Mishnah, I'll give a rough outline of what the Mishnah means, but as we go through the Gemara, we'll have a much better understanding of what the Mishnah is describing. So here you are with the Jew with his wine, and he's selling his wine to buyers, and along comes in a non-Jew, and so what the Jew now does is, from his big barrel, he's now going to pour into the non-Jew small container, and right, you don't want to spill, so you get out a funnel. And so the funnel now, it's a Jew's funnel, puts it in, pours his wine through the funnel, and now into the wine of the non-Jew. The next time he uses the same funnel, so the wine now that is going to go through the funnel is now going to be Yain Nesech, and as a result of that, the wine that's poured in now through is going to be Yain Nesech. Im yesh ba keves yain aser. So if there's an keves yain, meaning if there's some sort of lip at the bottom of the funnel, which collected the wine from the first pouring, so therefore it's going to create an iser for that second pouring. Again, stay tuned because a lot more details need to be ironed out over there. We're going to iron out the details in just a moment. Second case of the Mishnah, Hama'arim mikli el kli, et shi'irim imenu motiv, et shi'ir l'stocha aser. If I'm pouring from one kli to another, not clear over here, I said I, but not clear over here, who's doing the pouring, whose wine does it belong to, what is going on over here, let's just say, simply say right now, wine is being poured from one container to another. The container that I'm pouring from, mutter. The container that I'm pouring to is going to be aser. And again, just not enough information to really intelligently discuss the Mishnah. Stay tuned, and we're going to discuss that in just a moment. We start off with Tanan Hasan. We start off with the Mishnah in Taharos. Hanitza kakapatras. Sorry, let me pronounce it correctly. Hanitza kakatapras. Umash ketofayach eino chibur lolotum av lolotahara. The Mishnah Taharos describes what may connect one body of water to another body of water, but the Mishnah says that these things are not connectors. Let's say you have a vertical stream of liquid going straight down. That's a nitzok. Let's say you have a katapras. In other words, water that's coming down on a slope. Same basic idea. Or let's say you have mashke tofech amanas. Mashke tofech. Or let's say you have just a little bit of moisture. In other words, it's on a horizontal, it's not vertical, it's not on a slope, it's on a horizontal, but it's moisture. It's not a real body of water. So these are not connectors, not for tumah, not for tahara. Now, when it means not for tumah, it means as follows. Meaning, if let's say you have something tummy on one side, you have something tahara on the other side, that which is connecting the two is this flow of water, either a vertical string or a stream, or water coming down on a slope, or just a little slick of moisture. These are not going to connect A and B. That's what it means when it says it won't connect for tumah. It won't connect for tahara. So what that means is that let's say I have a mikvah on one side. I have a small body of water on the other side. But the small body of water is not 40 saw. And what's connecting them is either a vertical stream of water or water coming down on a slope or just a slick of moisture connecting the two. Not a connection. And therefore, the small body of water cannot be viewed as a kasher mikvah. Okay. Ha'ashbarin chibur l'tumah l'tahara. However, if I have ashbarin, ashbarin is a stationary small body of water, a pool of water, which is connecting one body of water to another body of water. The first body of water is a kasher mikvah. The other body of water is not. But it's being connected by a stationary body of water. So then you're good to go. That would be considered a connector both for the worlds of tumah and tahara. Amar Rav Huna, nitzok v'katapras u'mashke tofech chibur le'inyan yayin nesech. So Rav Huna says as follows. Yeah, you know, even though the Mishnah Torah says that these things are not connectors when it comes to tumah tahara, they will be connectors concerning yayin nesech. And that means that if I have a flow, a vertical flow, or a flow going down a slope, or even a slick of moisture, these all will be considered connectors for yayin nesech. So Amar Rav Nachman Rav Huna Manalach. Ha. So Rav Nachman asked Rav Huna a really simple question: where did that come from? How did you arrive at that conclusion? Oh yeah, that mission taharos, that's what got you going? Because the mission taharos says it's not a connector for tumah tahara. You could read into the Mishnah, but it would be connected for something else, notably ayin nesach. That's your diuk? So he says, Ema Seifa. Move on to the next part of the Mishnah. Hashbar and chibul tumah tahara. So when it comes to a stationary body of water, that would be a connector for tumah tahara. So the tumah tahara huda have chibur halin ayin nesach lahave chibur. Oh, so you're telling me now that vis-a-vis tumah tahara, a stationary body would be connected, but for yayin nesach, it's not a connector? And you know that diuk is a ridiculous diuk. So, in other words, making a diuk like that in the Mishnah is not going to work. Elameha like elamishma mina. So the Gemara says that you can't really connect. You can't connect. You can't connect your point of Rav Huna to the Mishnah taharos. It's not a diuk from that Mishnah. Tanan. Okay, what about our Mishnah? Natol samashbech umada lesoch tzuchasu shal vikocham v'chazra umada lesoch tzuchasu shal Yisrael. So now we're talking about the funnel, meaning the first case of our Mishnah, where a funnel is being used. Im yesh bo akeves yayin aser. So if on the bottom of the funnel there's some sort of rim, some sort of lip on the bottom of the funnel, so then the wine on the bottom of the funnel is going to be aser. Ha akeves yayin b'maika mitzra. La b'nitzok shmamina nitzok chibor. So the Gemara says, so let's understand this. Okay, so obviously a visual over here would help, but I think this is easy to imagine. Okay, so in other words, we have now the funnel being used the first time. Again, the wine is being poured from kosher wine, from the Jews' wine. It's being poured into the non-Jews' container. And you have the funnel now, allowing the wine to streamline into his flask. So now you're pouring. Now, I do understand that there is going to be a stream going all the way back to the original container.
How come the original container doesn't have a funnel?
Yeah, so, right, there's that issue, but let's just talk about the funnel right now. So when I'm pouring through the funnel, so now I have this wine, kosher wine, going through the funnel. The funnel itself is kosher. And now that wine goes through the funnel into his container. When it goes into his container, so his container, let's assume it has trace amounts of Yayin Nesach. So that wine that enters into his container is Yayin Nesach. And now I have a flow going from the funnel into his container. That flow is going to be a chibur. Assuming that a flow is considered a connector. If there is a lip on the bottom of the funnel, holding a little bit of that wine from that first funneling, and now I pick the funnel up and I use it now a second time, well, there is yayin nesach on the bottom. But that's only assuming that the flow between the funnel and the wine is in fact considered a connector. So what Rav Huna now is saying is that if I just described the Mishnah correctly, so what you see over here, that a flow is considered a connector. So, Tani Rabbi Chia, She Pachasto Tzuchaso. So, an answer that we saw earlier in the Masechta and that we get to see yet again is as follows. You didn't understand the case correctly. It wasn't the flow connecting the funnel to the wine in the first container, in the non-Jews container. But rather, it backed up. In other words, what happened is I pour the wine into the container through the funnel. Funnel obviously is going into the airspace of that container. And what happens is that wine gets backed up. And so it wasn't a flow connecting, but it was simply physical wine getting backed up and actually making physical contact with the bottom of the funnel. That is why now the wine on the bottom of the funnel is going to be usher. Very simple. So, So the Gemara says, so that means to say that if there wasn't backup and it was just a flow, so now you're telling me that it's not a connector. So the Gemara says, lo. Pachasa tzuchasa tisha lach ta'asar, nitok tibayin. The Gemara says, no. From Rabbi Chiyo, all we know for sure is that if it backs up, it's for sure asar. If it doesn't back up and it's just a flow, he's not saying definitively one way or another, and it's only because he's not sure in such a scenario, he's not saying. Or otherwise stated, Rabbi Chiyo is saying definitively what he's sure about. What he's not sure about, he just leaves open-ended, undiscussed. Tashma. Let's go to the next case of the Mishnah. Hamarim mikli likli etchem ha'arim mimenu mutter had the beni beni aser. So the Gemara says we're pouring from one container to another. That was the second case of the Mishnah. Now again, who's pouring from what to what? Not perfectly clear, but It's being poured from one container to another. So the Mishnah says very clearly, Eshema Arimimeno Mutter. The container you're pouring from is going to be Mutter. Sounds like anything after that is going to be Aser, including the flow. Had the Beni Beni Aser, Shema Minan Nitzu Chibur. Ah, so you see that the flow is going to be a connector. Now, Ben, here's your question. In Nitzu Chibur, Afilo, Digave, Damana Nami Litzer. Well, if the flow is a connector, so it connects all the way back to the original Kli, and the wine in the original Kli should be Aser, correct? So, Halokasha, Dika, Maktev Ketufe. Not necessarily, says the Gemara. We could be describing a scenario where the pouring was done staccato. So in other words, so it was a pour, it was a quick finishing of the pouring, and so therefore you basically have a stream mid-air broken between where I'm pouring from to where I'm pouring to. Under those circumstances, we can now say the stream is going to be aser, but it's not going to connect and communicate back to the original container. So the Gemara says, okay, fine, that's a nice ukimta, but you see that the flow would be a connector. The Gemara says, okay, but you know what? You want to read the Mishnah carefully? Let's read the end of the Mishnah carefully. The container in which I'm pouring into, the wine that in the container is going to be Aser. That means that the flow that has not yet arrived in the container is going to be Mutter. You could read the Mishnah that way. So the Gemara says, you're right. Checkmate. Meaning from the Mishnah, I don't know definitively whether or not the flow itself, that stream, is going to be aser or mutter. Tashma. Hama'ar mechavas labor kiluach, hayorid misfas chavas lamata, aser. So the Gemara says that if I am pouring from a barrel into a pit, the kiluach, the flow, that's going from the edge of the barrel, and anything below that is going to be aser. So tir Gemara sheshes bovikochav hama'ar das mikocho. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what? Again, now we're going to get a little more clarity. Who's doing the pouring? So the Gemara says that it's kosher wine, but being poured by a non-Jew. And this goes back to the topic that we discussed earlier in the Masechta, the end of the fourth parak, and that's the idea of koach. When he's pouring wine, so that is now him, with his force, directing wine. That's called koach. So the Gemara says, "Hi ove kochav ma'ara afilu gava dechavisin amimitzer." So the Gemara asks such a wonderful question. If the non-Jew is the one pouring this wine, so we're saying that anything leaving, exiting the wine is going to be aser. Really? What about the wine still in the barrel? Shouldn't that be aser as well? So the Gemara's explanation over here, koach dovi kochav midrabanu. This idea of koach, that a non-Jew is not touching the wine but simply pouring the wine. This is a din derabanan, the aser. Koach dovi kochav midrabanu. Who the aser? Hahu de nafik labrai gazru be rabanan. If the Gemara says that the din de rabbanan of koach, they only limited themselves to that which exited the barrel, but that which still remains in the barrel is not going to be aser.
Why is it the rabbanan? Because as soon as he moves the barrel to pour the wine, he moved the wine.
So right. It goes back to Ben's point yesterday. Yeah. And again, I'm going to go back to what I answered him yesterday. Agitation of the wine has to be done physically with his hand in the barrel. Just for causing the wine to move is not enough.
So why was it said in another one that if there's a space in the bottle,
right, shape, right, so right, right? I'm with you. I hear. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I do hear that. I hear that point. I'm stumped. Amaluhu Rav Chisda lahanu savisa. Rav Chisda talked to the wine sellers, and ki kailulu chamalov di kocham katafe ketufe, inami nafe nafutse. So he says that when you're going to be pouring the wine, make sure to pour staccato, like I described a little bit earlier. In other words, pour but quickly retract, so that there's no stream connecting your barrel to his barrel. Or nafe nafutse, Rashi describes as basically throw the wine at a distance. Again, same basic idea. There's no stream connecting the two. Amalu Rav Lahanu Shafuche Ki Shafichu Chamra Lo Likaru Kocham L'Sayeh Ba'Daichu Dilma Mishtalisu V'Shadisu Le'Alav V'Kasim Mikocha V'Aser. You're pouring the barrel. The barrel's really heavy. The non-Jew is like, oh, let me help you. Basically say to him, I can handle it. I don't want your help. And because what he's going to do is, if he's going to end up shouldering the the barrel. What may end up happening is that the way it's going to be then, instead of being evenly distributed between you and him, the barrel may end up being totally shouldered by him, which means now that he is responsible for the koach, for the force of pouring that wine, and as a result of that, the wine is going to be usher through, the wine that gets poured is going to be usher through the concept of koach. How gavra da asik karma begishto bas gishta.
What if, like, I'm carrying a Shabbat, both of them could handle individually, but like they're sharing the burden?
Right, okay, that's Hilchos Shabbos, meaning, that's it.
No, but there's a pouring.
I understand your point, but okay, that's a Hilchos Shabbos, it's a Hilchos Shabbos halacha. How gavra da asik karma begishto bas gishta. You have a person that is transferring wine from one to another using a siphon, right? Gishto bas gishta, basically the siphon's got two parts of it to it, that's why it's called gishta and bas gishta, and basically what it did is it created a suction from one container to another, and now we have a nice suction going, and now the wine is getting transferred from one to another. And asa v'kochavim anach yade agishta. So now, what a guy did is that as the wine is now getting siphoned off from one barrel to another, a guy came and touched the end of the siphon where the wine was coming out in a flow, and the matter came in front of Rava, and Asre Rava Lukule Chamra. And Rava says that all the wine is going to be Asr. So Amalei Rav Papa LaRava, Amalei Rav Adar Bar Masna LaRava, Amalei Ravina LaRava, B'mai, B'nitzok Shvamina, Nitzok Chibur. So he says, okay, but we're talking about a flow. And we've been discussing over the course of the second half of today's daf, a flow may or may not be a connector. We're not sure. But you, Rava, you seem to be pretty sure. So, Shani Hasan, Dekuli Chamra, Agishto, Bas Gishto, Garir. So Rava says, no. You know what? If we're talking about a flow where the force of the flow is only coming through gravity, so there, you know what? I'll say I'm not sure. I'll say that. But over here, we're talking about a siphon. And the siphon now, all the wine is being suctioned through the force of the siphon. And so since it's coming out through the force of the siphon, and since I know for sure that the wine is going to come out from barrel A and going to barrel B through the force of the siphon, so therefore when he's touching the end of the wine at the siphon, it's ki'ilu, it's as if he's touching the wine from the original barrel as well. Amar Marzucha Breit Rav Nachman, Kenishkenin Share. Drinking from a container where there are multiple straws coming out of the container. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do service to describing this apparatus, this kind of popular bottle back in the time of the Gemara. But anyway, it's kenishkenin. It's got like many straws protruding out of it. So you can have both a Jew and a non-Jew drinking from this container. Now, certainly ill-advised, meaning this is not the kind of scenario that you want to be in to begin with. But just from a standpoint of, are you drinking Yayin Nesach? So the answer is no. But that's only where you finish sucking out from your straw before he finishes his. But once he finishes his, then whatever goes back in is now considered Yayin Nesach, and so that's no good.
If a non-Jew blows bubbles into the wine, is it considered agitation?
Right. It's hard to imagine. It really is. In other words, you know, does he have a picture of this this apparatus, David? Does he have a picture of it?
No, I guess not.
No.
They didn't anyway. The question is that
there
was like a custom.
Okay. So, Rava Baravuna, Ikla Lebe Reish Galusa, Sharlu Lemishte Bekinishkinin. So, Rava Baravuna went to the Reish Galusa and he allowed drinking from this apparatus. Ika da Amri Rava Baravuna, Gufei Ishte Bekinishkinin. And as we get to the end of the Sugya, the Gemara tells us that he himself possibly drank from it as well. Tosos on the top of the Amud says, I can't believe this. Meaning, I know the Gemara just said it. Tema. Look at the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. So, Heich Hayashosa Bekinchin Shin Nehidalo Havichibor. Okay, you want to tell me that the wine that's in the straw is not considered a connector? Mikomakom. Hayalachush Doma Pasik Kodim Bereisho Vikochavim. And look, and we just said in the Gemara that if he finishes his drink before yours, so that which backs back in is going to be Asur. And you really think that Rava Barav Huna himself is gonna toy around with such an idea of possibly drinking Stam Yenam? What the Gemara is reporting is that he drank from such an apparatus. It doesn't mean that he drank together with a non-Jew from such an apparatus. So it just simply means that he used this apparatus in conjunction with another Jew. So then the question, of course, is, okay, that's really nice. And, you know, it may make it into the biography. But, in other words, but you're going to put it now in the Gemara? Like, why is it taking up valuable real estate of the Gemara? So, Yeshlamer, the Kamash Malan, the Lo Mitzvah, Bizman Azem, Mishum, Simcha, Lafuki, Miman, Dasim, Masecha Shabbos, Lishta, Bekanishkin, Bizman Azem, Beperek, Bameisha. So, the Gemara says, I'll tell you why it's in the Gemara, and takes up precious real estate in the Gemara. Because we know that there are certain things that we're not allowed to do as a result of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. In other words, certain things like, for example, music. I know as I say that, it sounds silly. Like we all listen to music. But you see the Gemara, you see the Rambam. So music is something which provides too much simcha, more simcha than allowed because of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, various haterim were given to music, but to Jewish music. But anyway. But in other words, one might have thought that this is such a joyous activity. Not only are you drinking with other people from this container that has multiple straws coming out of it. So that, Tosfos says, might have been the consideration. And that's the point. But Tosfos says, don't think for a moment that he actually drank from it together with a non-Jew. That's not what the Gemara meant.